Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
And I will note that these are the first forecasts that include the impact of Hurricane Milton, which dumped very heavy rains throughout central Florida in mid-October.
Patrick Boyle, chief of the crops branch of the National Ag Statistics Service.
So looking at the numbers there, all orange production is forecast to be down 5.2% or 3 million boxes from October, and down 9.9% or 6 million boxes from last season. Non-Valencia and Valencia oranges are both down from the previous forecast and last year. Grapefruit comes in at 295,000 tons. That's down 3% from the last forecast and 14.2% from last season. No changes on lemons from October, but up 7.5% from last year. Finally, tangerines down slightly from October and down 9% from last season.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Quite a bit going on in corn this month relative to some of the other commodities.
USDA out with their December World Ag Supply Demand Estimates report. Mark Jekinowski, chair of the World Ag Outlook Board.
Global production down 1.5 million tons, driven primarily by the EU and Mexico. Reduced forecast there reflects lower expected winter corn area, and that is due to drought, ongoing drought, prolonged drought that has been causing some concerns about reservoir levels there. So this is we reduced Mexico's production last month as well, so that problem is persisting. EU corn production down based on harvest results, 800,000 tons, and Ukraine, also there, just adjusting to recent harvest results, showing a little bit of a larger crop there. Global balance sheet. Now, in this case, I put up, you see, 2 years of the balance sheet. The back year, 2023-2024, I included because that actually reflects the crop that Brazil is currently still marketing. And there you can see the main thing I wanted to point out is our lower trade forecast for the back year on corn. That reflects slower shipments, corn shipments out of Brazil. Brazil, as you might know, they've been building up their domestic ethanol industry, domestic demand for corn, exporting relatively less, but that's giving more of an opportunity for U.S. corn. So now with regard to the out-year balance sheet, 2024-2025, on the left side of the table here. Feed use adjusted a little bit higher this month, 2.9 million tons. That reflects higher feed use in Brazil, EU, Iran, partially offset by lower feed use in Indonesia. And then our trade forecast raised here 3.2 million tons this month. That reflects higher exports out of the U.S., partially offset by lower exports from the EU. Ending stocks down, that's mainly lower stocks in the U.S. and China. And also worth noting here that we reduced our China import forecast 2 million tons this month. Now it's at 14 million tons, and if realized, that would be the lowest lowest volume of China imports since 2019-2020. U.S. foreign balance sheet, I already made reference, I think, to the strong U.S. Exports, and you can see there that we raised our export forecast this month by 150 million bushels, just reflecting strong sales and shipments, good demand for U.S. corn internationally. We also raised our ethanol corn use for ethanol forecast, 50 million bushels, and again, we're seeing a strong pace of corn use for ethanol. Right now, corn use for ethanol is running at about the highest pace since 2017. So a lot of strength there. Increased ethanol exports as well. And with that, with higher use, higher domestic use, no changes in supply, ending stocks tightens up. And as it stands right now, we're forecasting slightly tighter ending stocks year over year for corn, down 22 million bushels from last year. No change to our season average price forecast this month.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Basically, our job is to promote the free market approach.
Steve Dittmer is Executive Vice President of the Agribusiness Freedom Foundation, celebrating 20 years.
We had a lot of cattlemen, a lot of people, farmers and ranchers that didn't pay a lot of attention to politics for a lot of years. And I think probably Harry Reid and Barack Obama and when Nancy Pelosi first became prominent on the national scene kind of made people realize that who was in Washington, that whether they liked politics or not, it was very important to their business because it creates that business climate. We work with all segments of the industry and trying to get the information out there. There's a lot of things that farmers and ranchers, their immediate reaction is correct, but they don't necessarily have the factual background to back it up. So we try and provide that information and our opinion, and they can agree with it or not agree with it, but at least we've got them thinking about issues that are really important to the industry.
And when it comes to trade, Dittmer says it's vital for ag.
In trade in general, the tariffs that other countries put on us are a lot greater than what we do for them. Most of the time, we're talking about a 1% or 2% tariff and almost no non-tariff trade barriers. Other countries charge us a lot more. EU is a perfect example, and that's someplace that we would like to see some improvement because the UK needs trading partners. They have had not as much success with Brexit as they would like. And we're ripe to. Our problem with Europe has been their standards for sanitation are different. We use acetic acid, which is basically just vinegar dilute spray, for example, on carcasses, and they don't consider that permissible. There are things that are more non-tariff trade barriers than anything else to protect their industry. And, of course, the question had been people talking about President Trump, is he going to use a protective tariff? I don't think that's what he's involved in. A piece that we did recently has pointed out that everybody's always called a tariff a tax. And I think one of the things that we have to take into consideration is that international trade is different than it was years ago. It hasn't been very many years where we were talking about tariffs as a tax. And it was something we were trying to avoid. I think Trump wants to get to that point, but he realizes that he has to use whatever club he's got. And the threat of us putting on tariffs, this isn't like it was after World War II, where we were trying to help a lot of countries develop their economy, to develop overseas countries that didn't have the kind of economic security that we had, and we wouldn't charge them anything, and we let them do whatever they wanted. And we have a lot of continents, a lot of markets that are seconds, are double or triple or quadruple our tariff rates. And that's what really gets under Trump's skin. He thinks that it should be an even playing field. And if they think that he's going to be crazier, then, you know, he said whether it's foreign countries on the military side or it's on the tariff, if they think Trump is crazy and he might do everything, he takes advantage of that. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that works.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we got a 1.2 million bale increase this month globally in cotton production, dominated by India, which we'll talk about in a little bit more detail in the next few slides.
Mark Chekanowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board, looking at the global cotton situation.
Also some changes in Argentina. That's an area adjustment there based on MinAg data. Brazil up a little bit based on the recent data from Conabi. The main story in cotton this month is in India, and essentially what we're seeing there is really favorable weather conditions. This is, again, just a map of the main production areas, main cotton production areas in India. And the bottom line is that India this year had an excellent monsoon. You know, at first glance, one might say that this huge increase in rainfall, well above average, you know, could that be too much or damaging? But in fact, you know, the rain occurred when it needed to occur, and it ended when it needed to end. So it, by the time excessive rains could have caused damage during flowering or when the bowls were open, the rains had pretty much stopped. So they had really, really good growing conditions during the year, good timing of this rainfall. And as you can see here, again, just emphasizing the how good of a monsoon this was this year, total precipitation in India, about 2 standard deviations above average this year. And it's reflected as well in very favorable vegetation indices across the main cotton growing areas of the country. So in terms of the balance sheet, global balance sheet, cotton consumption raised this month, 600,000 bales. That mainly reflects higher consumption in Pakistan and Vietnam, but it's worth noting that there are also offsetting changes in China and India. We lowered China's consumption 500 million bales and increased India's by the same amount, 500 million. So on net across those 4 countries, we end up with about a 600,000 bale increase in consumption. Trade, cotton exports raised this month, 100,000 bales, mainly reflecting higher exports out of Brazil. We raised our Brazil cotton export forecast 200,000 bales this month. And then there were a few offsetting reductions in other countries. But cotton exports out of Brazil continue to be very strong. In terms of the U.S. balance sheet, really not much here this month. Essentially, we took the small production change that Patrick talked about a few minutes ago from NAS, raising production 60,000 bales, and that essentially ends up in ending stocks in unaccounted with no meaningful changes in any of the other use categories. And no change in our season average price forecast this month, which remains 66 cents per pound.
And according to USDA's Cotton Ginnings report, 9.479 million bale crops so far compared to 8.2 million last year. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Global soybean production forecast higher by 1.7 million tons this month.
Latest from the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates Report, or WASD, Mark Jekinowski, chair of the World Ag Outlook Board.
Driven mainly by higher production in Argentina, reflecting that's area. Higher area as that crop is being planted, about 50% planted right now. Also higher area in Bolivia, which isn't listed there. And the increase in Canada, that this reflects recent data from Stats Canada, reflecting the crop that was just recently harvested. Global soybean balance sheet. Main thing I'd bring to your attention here is the increase in crush this month, 1.3 million ton increase. That is primarily an increased crush in Argentina. And that is leading to more meal and oil exports from Argentina. Also worth noting, higher soybean oil exports from Brazil and the United States as well. We'll talk about the United States in a second. Trade, soybean exports up 300,000 tons. That is primarily higher exports out of Canada. And on the other hand, we raised our import forecast for Algeria. Real quick, just the U.S. soybean balance sheet. As you can see here, no real changes to any of the supply and use components, but we did reduce our season average soybean price forecast 60 cents per bushel this month, just reflecting recent price patterns. And at this point in the year, we have roughly about a third of the crop marketed at $10. soybean oil balance sheet. Wanted to put this up again this month just to drive home this the story about the strong export demand for soybean oil. You see, we raised our soybean oil export forecast by 500 million pounds this month, showing a very large year-over-year increase in soybean oil exports as well. Raised our extraction rate. That higher production is reflecting a higher extraction rate, 270 million tons. Pulling back a little bit from some of the food and other uses to really feed that export market, and ending stocks tightening up a bit this month as well. But the main story here is, again, that strong export demand for soybean oil, reflecting those relatively tighter supplies of palm oil.
USDA also out with a crop production report. Patrick Boyle, chief of the crops branch at NASS.
As you can see, at 792 pounds per acre, that's the lowest yield since 2015 and well below the historic trend line. So as you can see, a number of states, including Georgia, are up from last month. Missouri is showing a record high. Texas, the largest cotton-producing state, however, is showing a month-over-month decrease. And here's a really similar map, except this one's the yield comparison to the previous year. There's quite a lot of red on this map indicating year-over-year declines, including in the top three cotton-producing states, which are Texas, Georgia, and Arkansas. Now, the last slide on cotton. This is a quick look at the total production and how it compares to recent years. As I mentioned a couple slides ago, this month's forecast at 14.3 million bales is up 18% compared to last year.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, so it's December 10th, and we've got 10 days of funding left in the government. So there's the biggest issue of, can we pass a continuing resolution just to keep the government open?
Chandler Gould is the CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, or NOG.
But the biggest glaring thing that we are missing in the agriculture community is we still do not have a farm bill, and we extended it from September of 2023 to September of 2024. And here we are in December, about to end the 118th Congress, still without a farm bill. And because of where we are in the year and other priorities, we're going to end up extending this farm bill again, but hopefully with some type of economic assistance package on it due to the low commodity prices and the downward turn that we've seen in the agriculture industry.
It's one thing to say that one commodity is hurting, but at this point, all row crop commodities are hurting.
Very much so. And, you know, the USDA is even predicting lower net farm income starting in 2025 could be as high as 18 to 22% lower than what we're currently seeing right now. And of course, you know, inflation is a thing that happens and cost of production continues to go up. But when cost of production goes up, it never seems to come back down. And so as commodity prices continue to drop, we're definitely looking at a stressed farm economy, definitely in the row crops and with our U.S. wheat growers. So that's why we've been working so hard. I've literally been on the phone four or five nights over the weekend up until 10 o'clock at night, talking to both the House and Senate Agriculture Committee of trying to bring some type of economic relief package to the Farm Bill extension that'll have to be attached to the only must-pass bill that we still have left, which is the continuing resolution to fund the government.
Unlike most of our work, whatever isn't finished by Congress and signed into law before the end of the year is dead.
Well, you're absolutely right, Tony. I mean, anything that didn't reach the president by basically December 31st, even though Congress right now is not in session during that time, would have to be reintroduced in the new Congress starting in January. And since it's very clear that we are not going to have a farm bill this year, you've got the Senate changing majorities. So you will now have Senator Bozeman as the chair of the Senate Ag Committee. We're really hoping that we don't have to completely reinvent the wheel. There's been some good proposals from both the House and the Senate Agriculture Committees this year, trying to bring a farm bill to the floor of each chamber. hopefully we can take those good parts and start, closer to the finish line than rewriting an entire new farm bill. But with that, there are so many priorities now that you've got Republicans controlling the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. Though I know and feel very confidently that Senator Bozeman and Chairman G.T. Thompson getting a farm bill done early and quickly next year is at the top of their priorities, I'm not so sure it's at the very top of both of the chambers and this and the higher leadership as a must-do in the first quarter of next year. And so I'm worried it's going to get pushed further into the calendar year because of border issues and taxation and then, of course, confirming President Trump's nominees. All of that takes time, and most of those things will probably definitely come before a farm bill.
Chandler Gould, National Association of Wheat Growers. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Much of this increase in soybean oil exports that we're seeing from Brazil, the U.S., and Argentina reflects tighter palm oil supplies.
Mark Jackanowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board. Looking at the recent World Ag Supply Demand estimates in December.
And so it's going to take a little bit of a tangent here just to talk a little bit about the palm oil market and recent price developments there. You can see here a time series showing soybean oil in the U.S. and Argentina plotted along with palm oil prices. Historically, palm oil typically maintained a premium. Soybean oil typically maintained a premium to palm oil. More recently, premium has switched. Now, palm oil has strengthened in price considerably and making soybean oil, including from the U.S., much more competitive. And this just reflects tightening supplies of palm oil, reflecting some weather conditions, dryness earlier this year in Indonesia and Malaysia, recent excessive rain, led us to reduce our production, palm oil production forecasts for both Indonesia, back here Indonesia, and Malaysia going forward. Let's talk about Malaysia in particular for just a minute here. This is just a map of the main areas of Malaysia where palm oil is produced. This part, of course, is Peninsula Malaysia, and this is more eastern Malaysia. Then, of course, Indonesia right below, also a major palm oil producer. Between Malaysia and Indonesia, this covers 90-plus percent of the global palm oil production. Weather has been a driving factor recently in our outlook for both Malaysia and Indonesia, but focusing here on Peninsula Malaysia, noticed that there was some dryness earlier this year. This dryness typically will show up as reduced production potential about 6 months later. So that crop that is the palm oil that's recently harvested. And then the other thing that jumps out at you here is this huge increase in rainfall right here at the end of November. What we witnessed there was essentially about 6 months of rain hitting Malaysia, parts of Malaysia, over about a five-day period. And coming right at peak harvest, or at one of the peak harvests, and that created some pretty complicated logistics for harvest, lots of harvest loss, and that led us to reduce Malaysia's palm oil production forecast by about 500,000 tons. And then this is a rainfall trace for eastern Malaysia, which would also correspond to Indonesia as well. Again, you see that dryness earlier in the season, which is expected to show up as reduced production potential in about now, recent harvest time. So all this to say, the bottom line is palm oil supplies are tight, reflecting recent weather conditions, and that is creating some opportunities for for soybean oil exports from U.S., Brazil, and Argentina.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A record year for enrollment of acreage into USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service programs. NRCS Chief Terry Cosby says over 11 million acres were enrolled in fiscal year 2024. A crossroads between increased conservation program investments and landowner and producer demand for volunteer incentive-based offerings.
We had close to 18,000 new customers that walked through the door. We have those new folks that are wanting to invest in conservation.
The chief adds the combination of Farm Bill and Inflation Reduction Act resources allowed for only 36% of applicants to be funded for implementation of various natural resource conservation practices in FY24, meaning the remaining 64% of applicants
that want to be involved in this, hopefully over the next few years, they'll be able to participate also.
I'm Ron Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.